Welcome, friends, to Voices of the Sacred Feminine, whether you're across town or across the globe. That cut opening tonight's show is called Narayani by Diva Haley from her Sacred Alchemy album. I was enjoying it so much, I almost played the whole thing, and maybe at the end of the show I actually will. Well, if you haven't had a chance to tune in to last week's show, you might not know that you, my listeners out there, have once again broken our record for listens and downloads. Our recent show on instant healing and sex and the intelligence of the heart really went a long way to making this happen. So thanks to Julie McIntyre and Susan Shumsky for your insights, and my thanks again to you, my listeners. You are all gas in my tank that keep me going. And speaking of guests, I have some breaking news for you. I am ecstatic to announce I have coming on the show in June the famous Noam Chomsky, a great mind indeed, who I will have the honor of chatting with. We'll talk about how language can be used to oppress. We'll certainly discuss politics, and I'll see how closely aligned his views are with a non-dominator society, a.k.a. also known as goddess ideals. I'll certainly be surprised if we are not all under the same big tent. This is a major coup, and I got to tell you, I'm thrilled. And a shout of thanks goes out to Anish, who heard my call last week. What am I talking about, you ask? Well, I reminded listeners that I pay out of my pocket for the airtime here on Blog Talk. It's not free like it used to be a long time ago. So if you want to help keep me on the air, donations are most welcome in any amount, really, because they all add up. If you want to help me out, you can go to my website, KarenTate.com. When you're there, click on the Goddess Store page where I have my books and goddess greeting cards. There's also free meditations. You'll learn about the Sacred Places CDs that are for sale that you can get nowhere else but from me when I was on CBS Radio. And use one of the PayPal buttons there to make a donation. Remember, what Mother Nature teaches us, what we tend to and nurture, it thrives, and what we neglect withers on the vine. So thank you. Thank you, Anish Sarood. And while you're there, check out the special prices on my books. Help keep me going so I can keep the show going. And that also means with your wonderful comments, your guest suggestions, and story ideas, too. You know, I don't always come up with all these terrific guests on my own. It's listeners like you who make suggestions. And I'm usually booked several months in advance. So if you make a recommendation and I agree with your choice, it takes time for me to research the request, find the guest, and then get them scheduled. So don't feel bad if you're a suggestion doesn't happen immediately. but turning my attention to tonight. First up is Deborah Heenigan. She'll be with me discussing spiritual connections from the other side and dealing with grief when a loved one passes away. I'm sure that's going to be fascinating on different levels. And then crossing the threshold into the second half of the show is Sally Kempton on the subject of awakening Shakti, the transformative power of the yoga goddesses. But first, a couple brief announcements. Yes, we will have another show on Thursday of this week. Carl McColeman is with us to discuss Julian Norwich, a Christian mystic in 1371, and the hidden dimensions of goddess spirituality within Christianity, followed by another good Renaissance fellow of good goddess ideals credentials. His name is Andrew Gurevich. He's going to discuss with us this, what sounds complicated, but it really isn't, Gaian interconnectivity and the future of public myth, which will get us into a lot of topics like that Chauvet cave in France and the goddess in the upper Paleolithic era, the violent origins of patriarchal religion, Columbia and the history of the American goddess. It's a very sweeping topic for sure, so you won't want to miss it. And just one more thing before we get to Debbie. Hang on with me here.
The psychic state of the collective unconscious, which is that consciousness of the planet. It's called the chthonic mind, the mind of the earth.
Our ancestors understood that the animal and the divine were all connected. They were together, that there wasn't a separation. That's what we are trying to return to, is that sense that our animal nature is divine. It doesn't get in the way of the divine. It gets us closer to it.
What's your idea of being fully alive as a human being? Because that's what's really spiritual. Write it down. Start writing your own Bible if you want. That's the sacred. And by that, I just mean sweaty, fun, happy sex.
Well, that was some of the sound from the trailer for Dancing with Gaia, a feature documentary about Earth energy, sacred sexuality, and the return of the goddess as Gaia. It is a sincere film that goes deep into the connections between these important topics. The DVD comes packaged with a 45-page mini book that expands the material on the film. You can get it at dancingwithgaia.com. So thank you, Joe Carson, for allowing me to run your commercials. I do public service announcements here on Voices of the Sacred Feminine, as well as paid commercials to help defray the cost of airtime, like with Joe's commercial, because we don't yet have a sponsor, which we are looking for, so I'm putting it out there. So please stay tuned after my interview with Debbie for the bees buzzing around in my bonnet tonight, as well as for my second guest, Sally Kempton, discussing the Shakti and yoga goddesses. Okay, so with all of that housekeeping out of the way, let me thank Debbie for her patience and introduce her to you by way of her bio. Deborah Heenigan is a spiritual intuitive and energy counselor. She has a very unique way with helping people heal and turn their pain into peace. Her guidance through experiences and stories and the fundamentals that she's identified as tools in her book are all very powerful ways in which to work through any challenge in life, including the loss of a loved one. Debbie specializes in spiritual connections and the importance of being open to what's beyond. It's the beauty of spiritual connections with those on the other side, God, angels, loved ones, or goddess, that provide each of us the strength, peace, comfort, and healing to conquer any situation in life. And her website is painintopeace.com, and that's P-A-I-N, intopeace.com. So, Deborah, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Karen. It's great to be here.
Well, let's start at the beginning. You know, when somebody writes a book like this, I have to assume that, you know, they've been inspired because they have lived through it. Is that the case for you?
Absolutely. So it was many years ago, 26 years ago, when my sister, who's two years older than me, passed away from leukemia. And I was 15 at the time. She was 17. And, you know, ever since she had passed away, She came to me one night a couple weeks after she had passed, in the middle of the night at my bedside, and whispered my name in the middle of the night like she had done whenever she was sick. And I used to sleep in the, you know, on the floor in her room and help her to go to the bathroom in the middle of the night. So when she would whisper my name, I was immediately up. And she had done this to me a couple weeks after she passed. And I opened up my eyes and I saw her standing there. And I was so excited because I thought she came back. I knew she would. And when I reached out to touch her, she had disappeared. And ever since that moment, even though I was young and that was the first person I ever lost and I didn't really understand, but ever since that moment, I have had such a great connection with her. When she disappeared, I was, you know, pretty scared because I didn't understand what had just happened. The next morning, I just began talking to her, telling her that I missed her, talking to her about school and, you know, challenges that I was faced as a teenager, and just really talking to her as if she was right here in front of me. And lo and behold, she started answering. And it wasn't through words. It was through symbols and songs and numbers and animals and other little synchronicities that just happened to start happening at the moment when I needed her most. And, you know, I call them invisible hugs and, you know, other subtle things that occur that let me know that she's around. And when I would see a certain number that was hers or hear a specific song that she loved, I could feel her presence and just feel the energy of her, and it was very soothing and very warm and peaceful to me. And so I've been talking to her since, and we just have established our way of connecting and communicating, and it's helped me tremendously throughout my life. And so I was inspired by her to write the book, and I feel it is 100% divinely guided by her and the other, you know, higher power or God. And that's why the book came out. So it was born through this divine guidance.
So, Deborah, I believe what you're saying. I believe these things can happen. You know, I've talked to too many people who've had these experiences. But what do you say to the skeptic or the scientist who hasn't felt it, who says, oh, you know what, that is just wishful thinking. It's someone so desperate to have some sort of connection with their loved one. How do you answer people who say that?
Yeah, and, you know, there are a lot of people that are still in that boat, and my answer to them is take what feels right to you.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not here to change anybody. I'm only here to share the experience and the beauty of the connection that I have felt with my sister for the number of years that I mentioned. And, you know, it's everybody has the opportunity to experience it if they're open to it. And if they're not, that's okay, because that's their choice in their life. And, you know, I write about it in the book is, you know, one of the fundamentals. It really is about each individual and taking what feels right to you, because it should never be forced on a person. It really is whatever you're comfortable with. And, you know, I would love to bottle it up and have people drink from the, you know, magical waters that help them experience a little bit of heaven on earth, but that's not my choice. And so I just like to share my experiences with people because they're very real to me. And whether they're real to someone else or not doesn't matter, because I know how it feels in my heart and soul. And so allow people to take it with however they want.
So let's take the other extreme of it. The person who believes, who's desperate to connect with their loved one on the other side, but it doesn't happen. Why do you think that is? You know, I mean, even like you hear about Houdini, for instance, you know, that famous story, you know, he was into spiritualism and everything. He said that, you know what, if it's possible to come back, you know, from the other side and connect with people, I will do it. I mean, why do you, I mean, with all of your, I assume that maybe, and maybe I'm assuming wrong, but you've maybe connected with other people, or maybe you connect with spirits other than your sister. I mean, have they given any insight as to why some people can manage to make the connection with the people still alive, or vice versa? You know, where's the disconnect?
Mm-hmm. That's a great, great question, Karen. It really is about the individual. And I think what happens to us here on earth as humans, you know, we're all spiritual beings, number one. We're spiritual beings living the physical form here on earth. But a lot of times what happens to us is the human mind, our ego, society, the world around us, the man-made beliefs and different things that we have all been accustomed to being in the middle of will cause blocks for us. And, you know, we may have some deep-rooted beliefs that we were taught growing up that, you know, to connect with someone who has passed on is evil and it's a sin. And so if people have some deep-rooted beliefs that are in the core of them, that will block them whether they want to do it or not. It's a matter of working through if you have some beliefs that are telling you this isn't real or you shouldn't be doing it. The other thing that could be blocking it, blocking people from connecting, is being in the grieving state or being in a state of depression or sadness or something that's more on the negative side that's pulling you down. It's very heavy energy. Sometimes you want to try, and you're trying so hard to reach out and connect and get a sign, and you're looking for the big bang sign, meaning that your loved one appears to you in person, and maybe that's not happening because that's not the way they want to connect to you. Maybe they're sending you signs that are more subtle, like a song or an animal or a scent that you smell. And, you know, maybe you don't even recognize those because, again, they're smaller, they're more subtle. To me, they're a little bit more powerful, but everybody's looking for something different. And sometimes when we try really hard, we are missing it altogether because we're working too hard to make it happen. So, you know, I've seen all of those cases with different clients that I've worked with, and it's just a matter of just relaxing and being open and allowing it to occur naturally versus trying to force it.
Okay, so the million-dollar question, I mean, and if your sisters may be talking to you in scents and symbols, then maybe you can't answer this, but I'm going to, you know, pose it to you anyway. What is your sense of what it's like on the other side from this knowledge you have?
You know, what I sense from her, what I have felt from her on many, many occasions with different experiences, it's so pure and unconditional. It's actually very hard for me and for any of us to fathom because that isn't the way we think here. And we also know the pain and the different things that we all go through here on Earth. But over there, when I always say there's a little bit of heaven being sprinkled upon us, it's just this very comforting, pure, unconditional love like I've never felt. And it's hard to put it into words. Now, I've not been on the other side that I am aware of, so I'm not consciously there, but the invisible hugs that I receive from my sister, my grandparents, other friends, and others that have passed on, it's just so beautiful that it lifts me up and takes me, I don't want to say takes me away, but it takes me away from the stress of everyday life. It puts a calming over my body and allows me to relax and to realize that what's important is to focus on your blessings, to take a look around and just take in the beauty of life versus focusing on what do I need to do next and I have to pay bills and I have to take care of my kids and I have to run around and get all these errands done or whatever it may be that we get stressed about. So to me, it just really, it feels beautiful and it's so loving.
Okay.
I just love it.
Well, listeners, we are talking to Deborah Heenigan. She has written the book Closer Than You Think, The Easy Guide to Connecting with Loved Ones on the Other Side, and her website is painintopeace.com. So, Deborah, you know, to piggyback on your last comment there, it's funny that you should say that. I was reading something that came across my email today from Dylan Radigan, who used to be a host on MSNBC, and he quit to do things that he felt were going to be more fulfilling. And he was talking about Warren Buffett, and Warren Buffett actually tells people that to lead a good life, it's not all about the money. It's about, you know, it's more about what you said. It's about our connections with other people. It's about our dialogue. It's about richness, but not always about the money. You know, it's about the investments we make in people and things. And and you know, and I think that's he's saying the same thing that you're saying to a certain extent, you know, that you know, we get too caught up in the mundane world, you know, we're stressed, we're fearful. I mean, and we've been going through a really tough time in this country for a long time, so you know, all of that stuff probably gets in the way and clogs up the connection, so to speak, you know, and the channel isn't open. Would you say that's correct?
That's absolutely correct, and that's why, you know, it's important to take some big, deep breaths throughout the day to get the oxygen flowing throughout your body so that you can at least feel a little bit more calm, meditate, do something that just puts a little calming over your body, and whenever you can get to a more relaxed state, then you're more open to receiving because you're allowing your energy level and your energy vibration to be lifted up away from the negativity and be in a little bit more of a positive space so that good things like connecting to those on the other side that provide beauty and love, so that opens up for you and you can feel
well,
it.
Well, you know, I'm going to throw you a curve here, and if you don't want to answer, just say, nope, pass, let's go to the next question. But, you know, this is fresh in my mind because it was a guest I had on very recently. They were talking about sacred hallucinogens and you know, and herbs that, you know, help us relax, help sort of lower the veil, you know. I'm wondering if you have any experience with those sorts of things, if they either help or hinder a connection with loved ones on the other side.
I personally don't have experience with them, but what I would say to people is if you find a method that helps you to relax so that you can be in a better place, again, versus being caught up in the day-to-day stress and activities, if you find something that helps you get to a better place, then, you know, by all means, try it. I can't say whether that works or not, but again, everybody is different. Some people can't do breathing techniques to relax themselves. It doesn't work. Some people need music. Some people need to do an actual meditation that's an hour or longer. So everybody will find their own method of trying to get themselves settled and out of the stresses of the day, of life. But, you know, whatever works for you, please, you know, give it a try. But I can't say whether that works or not. I've not.
So do you think a person needs to have faith that they have to believe in a higher power to have a spiritual connection with a loved one on the other side?
Absolutely, 100%. The first chapter of my book is all about faith. You really have to have faith in a higher power, but also faith in yourself. Because I think, again, the way the world is, you know, we're all told that everybody has, you know, a certain talent and a certain gift, and only those that can connect to people who have passed are called psychics or mediums. And while psychics and mediums can do that, everybody else can too. It's a matter of whether you believe in yourself and have faith in your abilities to be able to open yourself up to that beauty of the spiritual world. So to me personally, I believe that faith is the most important thing that we should all have for a higher power, for ourselves, and just for our own abilities in this world.
Okay. Well, so you know, we've been talking a lot about the other side, and maybe one more question before we get into dealing with grief when a loved one passes, because that's important too. And, you know, it's a little bit heavier of a topic, but I think it's important because, you know, that pain can be devastating. I want to talk a little bit about the simple signs. You call them the subtle signs rather than the rock star moments. You know, I mean, I would imagine if a loved one passed away and spoke to me in a dream, which actually happened, to tell you the truth, when my aunt passed away, the only time I've ever communicated with someone who's passed away, I didn't know she was gone, but she came to me in a dream, which she had never done before, but the night she passed, and when I woke up the next morning, I found out she had passed away. But does that fall into the subtle signs or the rock star moments?
That's pretty big rock star one. I mean, because that's amazing that she had come to you before you had even known it happened,
right,
and then you found out after the fact. And, you know, it really it could be either. I mean, it's subtle because you didn't realize, but it's also rock star because, you know, she came to you. So, you know, it's, to me, I separated the two because of just different experiences that I've had and then experiences that others have had. And what I've found is that it seems to be a little bit easier to explain to people when you can separate the two. They're both very powerful in and of themselves, whether it's subtle or Big Bang, but it's a matter of how you receive that experience and how you embrace it.
Well, you know, as we're talking about this, and it just popped into my head to ask you, do you think this is easier to do if there is a strong love bond between the people? But then the second prong of that is, so where does that, if you think love is important, what about the mediums that claim to be able to talk to other people for somebody else?
Mm-hmm. I don't think that the love between a human and someone who's passed is necessarily important or a driving force in the connection. Because I've had several clients who have had falling outs with their parents and maybe had not talked to them for years, and, you know, a parent dies and then all of a sudden their relationship is rekindled, even though it's not a physical relationship. It's healed and it's continuous now with that person on the other side because they were able to work through forgiveness and reconnect just in a different way, not, again, the physical way. So, you know, even though that might be, that example is parent-child and there's some deep inside love no matter what just because of the connection of a parent and child, I really don't think that that's necessary. It's, again, a matter of whether you're open to it or not, because I will tell you early on, for me, I only connected with my sister, but that was my own belief where I thought this is just for me and her and I shouldn't be connecting with anybody else because I really just want to connect to her. We were best friends before she passed and, you know, different reasons why. But what I realized was as soon as I opened myself up to being available, if you will, or embracing my grandparents and others, it happened naturally. So I had love for my grandparents, and I still didn't connect with them until I allowed myself to be open to it. So I think it comes back to what we said before, having faith in knowing that that connection can be there, having faith in yourself and your abilities to receive or connect, and then just allowing it to happen, whether there's love or not.
So let's talk just a little bit about the subtle signs, and we'll go on, you know, we'll still have some time to talk about dealing with the grief. Okay, so subtle signs. You said it can be a song, it could be a smell, something like that. But maybe that's all that's about all you can say about it. But can you elaborate a little bit for, say, a listener out there who's trying to discern between, is this a subtle sign or not?
You know, yeah, am I making it up in my head? Yeah.
Am I making it up in my head, or, you know, is it just something you know intuitively? What more can you say about recognizing the subtle signs?
Maybe what I'll do is I'll give a couple examples through stories. I think sometimes that helps. For instance, a client of mine was looking to buy a new house, and she wasn't sure if she should buy a new house or not, had gone and looked at, you know, worked with a realtor, went to see a couple different homes, went into an older home, knowing that she did not want an older home. And when she went through, it was vacant. And the realtor said, just give it a chance, walk through. And she was very reluctant, but did it anyway. And as she was walking through the house, she came into one room where, again, no furniture, vacant, you know, it's completely empty. But on the windowsill, there was a little dolphin statue. And dolphins her grandmother collected. And so they had a very special meaning to her because when her grandmother passed away, she took over the dolphin collection. And so for this home to have nothing in it, and there was this little dolphin statue on the windowsill, to her was her sign saying, wow, my grandmother's here to tell me that this is the house. And even though I didn't want to come into it, And so as she started walking through the house, she could just feel like, wow, there's so much that she could do to make this home her own. And that's very subtle. Now, some people could look at that and say, so what if someone left a dolphin statue on the windowsill? But to her, the meaning of a dolphin and the meaning and the importance of trying to make a decision of whether she moves or not was really big. Now, someone, you know, again, you could chalk that up as a coincidence, or you could just say, it really means nothing. But she felt in her body an energy and just the knowing. And, yes, it is sort of intuitive, but it's just a knowing. It's like, you know, whenever people say, how do you know you're in love? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard to language these things if you've never had any sort of experience like this.
Exactly, yes.
So give us another example.
So others could be, let's see, when you're having a bad day. I mean, I'll give you a couple of my examples. So I've had, just recently, in fact, on Friday, I'm having a little bit of an issue in a relationship, and I had been praying on it for days, and I wanted a sign, and I'm very big on asking for signs, and typically I will get signs, and I haven't done it in a long time, but I just, you know, I do a lot of praying, and I just said, please just let me know everything is okay. And for the last couple of days here in Pittsburgh, it has been beautiful, 70, 75 degrees, sunshine, blue skies. Typically, you would never see a rainbow with a blue sky. But the day that I was going to meet my friend to have this very serious conversation that wasn't going to be very comfortable, as I was driving to this place, I looked up in the sky and there was this beautiful rainbow. Okay, and that may not be so subtle, but it was, because it was, to me, it's, you know, you could look up and say, wow, that rainbow is beautiful, but then not realize that that's a sign from above just saying, we're here sending you some light and love and letting you know that it's okay and that, yes, this is going to be a hard conversation to have, but you can do it. And so, to me, those kinds of things happen to me all the time. They happen to other people that I talk about. And some people can't accept those types of things that happen because they question it. They're just not ready to accept it. But know that whenever things like that happen, it's not a coincidence, and it's happening to just send you some love and give you the strength or the energy or whatever it is that you may need to get through that situation.
Yeah, you know, I've had so many things happen to me in my life that it's really hard for me to deny that there's something out there, that, you know, we're not connected to it. I'll never forget an experience I had in the dentist chair. And that's why I asked you too about drugs as well, because, you know, I was getting a root canal, and I had a spiritual experience in the dentist chair. It was just an incredible thing. And, you know, in another time when, you know, fire was bearing down on the community where I have a house, you know, I got together with some other friends and we did prayers and, guided meditations and affirmations. And this fire had been burning for 3 weeks and was steadily every day inching its way closer, 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 closer. The firemen couldn't stop it. The day we started that prayer work, the fire stopped. And in fact, some of us were visualizing rain, and we had rain the next day at a time of the year that it never rains. I mean, you know, things just happen that, sure, somebody else could say, oh, it was all just a coincidence, but you really got to wonder, you know. Sometimes the odds just feel just so totally against any of these things having any meaning.
Right, and that your story is so great because it's things like that. It's very miraculous. It's very powerful if you and when you believe.
Yeah.
And so those who don't believe, again, will say it's a coincidence, and that's fine. And, you know, what, again, like I said in the, you know, beginning of the show, let people take what feels right to them. And
right.
It's unfortunate. I feel bad for people who aren't open to it because I feel they're really missing out on a really lot of blessings,
and
a lot
richness,
of positive,
richness.
Exactly, absolutely.
So would you say, I mean, you know, this might be a sweeping statement, but would you say then that maybe, you know, an atheist is not someone who could maybe experience something like this because they're probably going to be shut off to it?
You know, again, it depends on how deep in their belief system that they are. I believe everyone can if they're open to it, and it's a choice. It's an individual choice. So, you know, I do know of some atheists who are very open to it because it, their belief system, what they've done, different experiences have happened to them in their life that have opened up their eyes to wonder about the beliefs that they were brought up in. And so they have, like I have, like many people have, questioned the beliefs that they were born into, and they've decided whether those beliefs work for them at this point in their life or not. And
right.
So, you know, for me, I've gone through many beliefs and said, you know, that doesn't work for me anymore, and it doesn't feel right to me. So
yeah,
I'm
I know. I used to be
go.
A Catholic.
And I was raised Catholic.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, and yep. It meant nothing. You know, it was just
right.
a quirk of fate. You know, it had
exactly.
no, you know, it just didn't get its hooks in me like, you know, Goddess does. I have, I think we have a caller. Sometimes my call, you know, they're just listening, but sometimes they have a question. Would you mind taking a question if they have one for you, Deborah?
I would love it, sure.
Okay, let's see if they have a question for you. Hi, caller from the 352 area code. Did you have a question or comment for Deborah or myself?
Sure.
Go right ahead.
My name is Cindy, and I'm from Florida. Yeah, I'm 52 years old, and I was just wondering if you had any messages for me from the other side. My son was crossed over like 8 months ago. I'm just wondering if there's anything there for me. I have two exes that have crossed over too.
What I feel immediately that he is all around you, and if you haven't felt him, it's from the heaviness that you're feeling from that loss, and it really is about you just calming down and just being open to receiving messages from him. In fact, he's sent many to you. They're whirling all around, and I just feel like he's around you, and it's a matter of you opening up to allowing him to connect.
I've seen some things around the house that are different. And he was murdered, so they're still an open investigation. But I just, you know, just every day, every minute of the day, I think about him and just, you know, hope this is we have some closure.
Yeah, I think that's probably why I was feeling the heaviness, because it is very heavy energy, and it's heavy energy that you're carrying. I don't know if it's just the lack of the unknown of what happened or what, but it's if you could get yourself to a lighter place and try to look at the blessings in the time you had with him and the blessings that you still have in your life and the blessing that you have with him as well from a spiritual level, if you could get yourself to a lighter place, then I think you'll be able to feel some peace from him.
Well, thank you, caller, for those questions. So, Deborah, that's a great segue to get into the grief aspect of this. Death is difficult, obviously, to accept, you know, for everyone. How does someone sort of disassociate from the grief to be able to see the blessings and the gifts, which I think you sort of refer to as the positive side of death, if there's such a thing?
Right, right. And it is hard to fathom that, right, especially when tragedies and such occur. But the first thing that I would say to everyone is, you know, grieving is a good thing. And the best thing that you can do for yourself is to be in the feelings that you're having. You know, allow yourself to feel whatever pain wants to come to the surface, whether it be anger, sadness, depression, whatever it may be, it's so important to allow it all to come out. And there is no time frame to grieve. I know a lot of different things out there say, you know, within 6 months or whatever time frame is, you should be done. It's really unfair to put a time frame around it because everyone is different. Everybody reacts and responds to experiences differently, and we're each individual. So the best thing you can do for yourself is be honest with yourself about your feelings and allow yourself the ability to release them. So feel, face, and process every emotion that comes up And as you do that, just by releasing a cry, that's releasing energy. That's starting to shift your energy. And you may cry for weeks and months. And if that's what you need to do, please allow it to occur. Because what I've noticed is when we lose someone, we're grieving for that loss, but it's also bringing up a lot of stuff in the past that we never allowed ourselves to grieve over. Could have been a loss of a job. It could be moving from one house to another. I mean, there are many things that we can grieve about, and a lot of times we don't give ourselves the permission to do that because we're supposed to be strong and not, you know, show emotions. So sometimes the grieving process for someone is longer. They think it's just because of the loss of that person that happened most recently, but it's really bringing up a whole lot of stuff that you never let yourself process in the past. So let it out. That's the best thing you could do for yourself, excuse me, is let it out. Because as you do that, that will start to shift the energy. You will eventually start to feel lighter, and you will start to feel some peace and healing come in. But you got to give yourself a break and, you know, allow yourself to process the emotions that surface.
Well, you know, we've been talking around the subject, and maybe you've sort of touched on this and but said it a different way. Are there some key items to consider as one works through the challenges of losing a loved one or you know, dealing with these sorts of life situations?
It really is what I just meant. You know, first you have to, you know, feel what you're feeling. Be in whatever it is that you're experiencing because of the situation that occurred. Again, a lot of times, you know, we think we have to be strong. We think we have to just move on because it's too painful. And that pain will not go away, whether you brush it under the carpet or not, or you deny it. It will never go away until you allow yourself to feel it. So it's a process. And then once you let that out and you face whatever comes up as the future comes. So, for instance, maybe you've grieved for a while and you actually feel okay, but you have your days. Allow yourself to have those down days. Please don't deny yourself the feelings you're having because you're not helping yourself by denying it. So when I wake up and I have a down day, I accept it. And I do a lot of acceptance statements. And I'll just say, you know, I accept the fact that today I feel really sad. 26 years later, I still have my days where I cry and wish my sister was here. And, I mean, it's okay.
Yeah.
So by accepting that, you're helping to shift the energy and helping yourself to heal and move forward.
Well, I guess this is part of the healing, too. You know, but maybe if some people would find, like, maybe writing about it cathartic or, you know,
well, absolutely. Yep.
Using different activities that may be cathartic to, you know, to the healing process.
I see what you mean. I'm sorry. Absolutely. As you're letting it out, find methods to let it out. So it's talking to someone, seeing a counselor, writing in your journal, like you said, writing letters to your loved one. It's any kind of process that helps you feel like you're involved in it. So absolutely.
Well, you know, I mean, this might sound crazy, but, you know, one of the deaths that affected me and my husband the most, and I almost feel silly saying this because it wasn't a human being, it was our beloved cat. And I mean, I was in, you know, this dark place for a really long time, and we ended up you know we didn't know how to deal with it, you really, because we hadn't really experienced the death of someone that really meant a lot to us before. I felt better after I wrote about it. We you know, got a brick you know, a brick engraved in her name, and you know, it's put in the side of a museum now. You know, and you see, like, the people whose children were killed in that shooting. I mean, they're activists now, you know, for background checks and you know, safe gun legislation. You know, I think about when O.J. Simpson, the trial, and you know, the sister of the deceased girl, you know, they started a foundation. And so I guess different people find different ways to channel their grief.
Absolutely. And it's again, whatever helps you to feel like you're part of something. And it, you're right. When a lot of people pass away, especially the different tragedies that, you know, that you had mentioned, it is a push for someone to go out there and do something so that they can feel like they're making a difference, that they're adding some positiveness to other people's lives and possibly and probably saving lives so that something doesn't happen to someone else like it happened to their loved one. So, yeah, doing those kinds of things helps you heal and feel part of something, since you have a void from missing that person. And then also doing rituals, if you will, like you said. You know, it's going, like with your cat, you did the different, you know, the brick, like you said. And, you know, you do different things that make you feel like you've done enough for the person or the animal that you loved. Animals are like children, and, you know, they're a part of your life no different than a human is. And so I could see you doing that. Many people do. I know I would as well. And it's a matter of you feeling like you've done something to celebrate and to remember their life. And so
Right. Whatever
feels right that you can do to feel as if you've done what you can to say, I love you, and this is in memory of you and in celebration of you.
Well, you know, since we're on the subject of passing over and the other side, I'm wondering if you have any thoughts on reincarnation.
I do. You know, I believe in it. I mean, I believe that we are all here to experience whatever it is that we're faced with, that everything does happen for a reason, and that it is, you know, whatever happens to us, whether it appears on the surface as good or not so good, it's happening to help us grow spiritually and as individuals. And I believe that we come back time and time again to learn and grow to a higher level. And I believe, you know, after this lifetime, I'll be back again to learn whatever it is I'm supposed to in my next lifetime. And, you know, it's a matter of us, you know, embracing experiences and allowing ourselves to grow instead of being hung up on, why did this happen to me? You know, it's going to pull me down in my life. And, you know, being more in the victim mode versus
right. Accepting
of it and saying, you know, of course we wish we could change some of these things, but because we can't, we have to find a way to turn that pain around and, you know, use it for the positive for ourselves. And like you said, some people go off and they, you know, start different charities or, you know, whatever it may be to try to help others from experiencing the same pain.
You know, I think we might have another caller. Deborah, let me just check here just a minute.
Okay.
We have a little bit of time.
Okay.
Hi, caller from the 954 area code. Did you have a question for Deborah?
Yes, my name is Mary. I'm calling from Florida. I lost my mother in 2005, and we were extremely close, very spiritually connected, going through a lot of challenges right now in my life, and I'm wondering if you can connect with her, if she has any messages for me.
The message that I got is that you can connect to her. The wonderful thing is, I feel like she is trying to help you right now, but you're focused on the worry and doubt, the fears of where you're supposed to be headed. What I feel is that you know exactly where you should go, where you need to go, where you desire to go, but I think fear is holding you back. And so what I'm getting is that as soon as you can accept her help, she's there to help you along and give you the strength that you need. And, yeah, I mean, I'm feeling that very strong. Like, I feel like she's right. Like, she is saying to you, I am here helping you. Let go of the fears. Let go of your doubts. And move forward. Move forward with faith. And know that she's giving you strength along this path.
Thank you, caller. We have another caller, Deborah. Let me check in with her. Caller from the 310 area code, did you have a question for Deborah?
Sure. Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I just actually came home from work, and I'm just listening to the show, and thank you for being here. I am launching a business very soon, and whatever I need to hear for my highest good, I would love that opportunity to hear.
I think that you, to me, I feel excitement. This is good. It feels very light. It's exciting. You have really good energy. I think you have. You believe in yourself for what you're doing. You will. Mm-hmm. You do have some doubts and fears that are coming up that's trying to pull you down. But if you can separate the two between your mind and your heart, like if you can turn your mind off, because sometimes our minds go crazy on us. If you can turn it off and just go within and just really feel the energy behind what you're launching and feel that desire, you will feel such strength and excitement because it's there. Like, I can feel it from you. Like, you, as long as you can stay out of your mind and just go within and follow your heart and really try to discern the difference there, meditation maybe, just settle yourself down to make sure you're following your heart versus your mind, you will be great. But you got to stay out of your mind. Like, that's just the piece that I get. Like, just step away from your mind and just follow your heart.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank
that's
you.
Awesome.
Thank you, caller. Well, Deborah, I see my next guest is on the switchboard, so we're going to have to start wrapping this up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've covered a lot of territory, but you know, before we wrap this up totally, is there anything I haven't asked you that you think that you feel is important to share with listeners?
You know, I would just reiterate that it's so important for all of us to just be open to what is beyond the physical world, because when we get so caught up in the beliefs and society and the what seems to be the awful experiences out there, we're buried and we're losing the purpose of life. And I really think that if you can do the best you can every day to start the day off telling yourself that you're going to look for one blessing today, start with one. And when you find that and feel the beauty of it, every day look for blessings so that it can help you stay on the lighter side. It's hard, believe me. I'm there. I mean, I'm human, and I have my days, but I have to coach myself sometimes to really just be in a positive state. But whenever I do, it's great. And overall, my life is fantastic. And so I would just ask everybody out there to just wake up tomorrow or start right now and look for a blessing from today, and every day do this and write it down if you have to, so that you can go back and read the different blessings so that you're reminded of the beauty of life, so that you can try to get through difficult experiences that come your way a little bit better.
Well, thank you, Deborah. So, listeners, we have been talking to Deborah Heenigan, and her book is Closer Than You Think, The Easy Guide to Connecting with Loved Ones on the Other Side. And to say goodbye to Deborah, we are actually going to play a little cut from a song by our new artist, Celia, and the title of the song is Connected.
Say goodbye to the hiding, peace and love is colliding, of missions with lying, and I'm connected to it all. But when the feathers start fraying, there is comfort in praying, I've made friends with the day, and I'm connected to it all.
Deborah, thank you so much for all your insights and wisdom you've shared with listeners tonight.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure. I really enjoyed it.
Well, good. I did too. And just a reminder that your website is paininintopeace.com. That's paininintopeace.com. So good night for now, Deborah, and I hope, you know, you keep connecting with your sister, and you're obviously helping a lot of people. So, you know, good luck with that.
Thank you. Many blessings to you. Thanks again for having me.
Oh, good night. Well, we're going to be getting to Sally Kempton in just a few moments here, and we're going to be talking about Shakti and the yoga goddesses. But I want to ask you if you know about the Goddess Spirit Rising Conference in Malibu, California in September. Let me tell you about it real quick. It is an international retreat on the Pacific in Malibu, California, September 6th, 7th, and 8th. The organizers say join us for three amazing days of workshops, ceremony, and wisdom with world-renowned presenters, plus artists, musicians, vendors, readers, and healers. They say, as reflections of her divinity, we invite you to be part of the celebration of her and the creation of a vision for a world that reflects Goddess more closely. We seek to honor our diversity, the beauty of the sacred feminine's children, and our collective contributions to a world built on community, mutuality, and reverence for she who is all. If you'd like more information about coming to the Malibu Conference, which is called the First Annual Goddess Spirit Rising Conference, go to goddessspiritrising.com. And they also have a link on Facebook, which is Goddess Spirit Rising. So if you have any questions about that, you can get in touch with me. I hope you'll also subscribe to my new blog, Herstory with Karen Tate, on Blogger. Also, please go to my Facebook page and like my new Voices of the Sacred Feminine radio page. And thanks again, I can't say it enough, to Cindy Williams for helping me set up both my blog and my radio show Facebook page. Now, I would normally have my bees buzzing in my bonnet segment right now, but with our second guest already on the switchboard, I don't want her to wait any longer. I'm going to say hello to her in just a second, but I'd just like to ask you to please stay tuned with me until after our interview, because I have lots of things buzzing around in my bonnet tonight I want to share with you. But first, let me say hello to Sally Kempton. Sally, are you on the line?
I am on the line, Karen. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Thank you so much for being with me tonight. And I want to introduce you to listeners by reading your bio, if that's okay with you.
Of course.
Okay. Sally Kempton writes the popular yoga journal column, Wisdom, and teaches workshops, retreats, and online courses internationally. She is the author of Meditation for the Love of It, From Sounds True, and Awakening Shakti, the Transformative Power of the Goddesses of Yoga, which we're going to be talking about tonight. And she resides right here on the West Coast in Carmel Valley, California. And her website is her name, SallyKempton.com. So, Sally, let's jump right in. In your book, Awakening Shakti, you sort of introduce your readers to the 11 goddesses of yoga. I think there's probably a lot of women out there that didn't realize that there are goddesses of yoga. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, the goddesses of yoga are the goddesses of the extraordinarily diverse and powerful Indian pantheon of goddesses, each of whom in her own way is connected with a different aspect of the yoga tradition. And of course, I'm talking about yoga in the broadest sense of the word, not simply the yoga of asana, not simply hatha yoga, but yoga as the power that the practices that unite the physical with the spiritual, that unite the mind and the heart, that actually give us the experience of union with the divine. So the book, Awakening Shakti, is the result of my about 40 years of practice with the South Asian goddess tradition and with the deep understanding about feminine spirituality and the power of the feminine that comes out of the tantric tradition. So the book is a combination of meditations, understanding about who these goddesses are. They're goddesses, many of whom I'm sure you've heard of, Lakshmi, Saraswati, Durga, Kali, who's actually one of the most popular forms of the divine feminine in the West and in the yoga world especially, and some other goddesses who might be less well-known in the West, goddesses like Dumavati, Bhuvaneshwari, Lalita, each of whom represents a particular aspect of the divine feminine, and each of whom can really unlock aspects of our own soul.
Well, yeah, I know about working with, you know, the individual goddesses, whether it be, you know, them as an archetype, but you feel like it goes beyond that, that they're actual real beings. So you're not just, for you it's deity, it's not just archetype or ideal.
Exactly, and I think of goddess energies, I mean, first of all, of course, as I'm sure you know, Karen, one of the best ways to understand what a deity is really to recognize that deity is a unique vortex of energy. That once you tune into it, you can contact the energy in an anthropomorphic form. You know, the drawings and statues of goddesses show them in their anthropomorphic form. You can experience them through mantras, which are powerful sound forms that in the tantric tradition are considered to be literally sound forms of goddess energy. And in my experience, the goddesses are archetypes, of course. They represent powers of the human spirit, powers of the human soul. But they are also beings who exist in subtle forms in realms of consciousness that are deeper and subtler than the ones that we normally become aware of. And the other thing about the goddess energies that's very powerful once we start to tune into it is that they actually exist in nature. So, in other words, the energies of the goddesses like Lakshmi, Kali, Durga are experienced in the natural world, in weather patterns, in planetary alignments, in particular forms of landforms, in trees and plants. And once we begin to tune into them and to experience them, what we find is that they are powerful, helpful energies that, you know, that we can literally call on and invoke and experience as spiritual guides, as protectors, as gateways, as doorways into the spiritual world, into different aspects of the subtle world.
I want to get back to the individual goddesses and how you use them with yoga, but two sort of peripheral questions before we move on and I forget to ask you. And they're not really related, but if the first is, you know, my listeners might not be familiar with the term Tantra, or if they are, you know, there's a lot of horrible things on the internet, you know, that refers to as Tantra. I want you to address that. But also, when you said, like, the goddesses of nature, for instance, what popped into my mind was Hurricane Katrina, or recently the hurricane that hit the East Coast. What goddess would you say was the goddess at work, or am I misunderstanding what you're telling me?
Well, traditionally, extreme weather events are connected with the goddess Kali and different aspects of the goddess Kali, who have names like Bhairavi, Tara. They're actually fierce goddesses who create apparently destructive but in fact transformative events in nature. So hurricanes, volcanoes, storms, are generally associated with the fierce goddesses, and the kind of spring that we're having in California, at least in my part of California this year, would tend to be more associated with the beautiful, gentle goddesses like Lakshmi. And the interesting thing about working with goddess energies in terms of natural phenomena is that you can begin to tune into the sacred quality in intense weather events as well as in the beauty of nature. And part of what goddess practice will begin to show you is the very, very profound sacredness of everything in the natural world. you know, it's so that there's an amazing poem by Swami Vivekananda about the goddess Kali as a storm, which I quote in my book, which if you'd like to hear it, I'm happy to
read
part of
it.
It's a great example of somebody. Swami Vivekananda was a very, you know, very powerful teacher of the early 20th century, who was a lover of Kali, and he talks about finding the fierce goddess in a storm, and he writes that the stars are blotted out, clouds are covering clouds. It is darkness, vibrant sonnet. In the roaring, whirling wind are the souls of a million lunatics just loose from the prison house, wrenching trees by the roots, sweeping all from the path. The flash of lurid light reveals on every side a thousand shades dancing with joy. And then he says, come, mother, come. Let every shaking step destroy the world. Who dares misery, dance in destruction's dance. To him the mother comes. So this is a form of the divine, in the form of the destructive powers of nature. Whereas, for example, the goddess Lakshmi, who's another form, another one of the yoga goddesses, it reveals herself in beautiful gardens, in the lushness of nature, in gentle sunshine, and the sounds of birds. And both of these energies are aspects of the Divine Mother, and both of them can reveal the deepest forms of love, one through the gentle face of nature, one through the fierce face of nature.
So what would you say to someone who says, well, what good could come from the fierce part of the mother? I know you said transformation, but like the hurricanes, the wildfires out here in California, I think there's a volcano that either has or might be erupting soon in Alaska. What good do we get out of that, in your opinion?
Well, there are many levels of it. For one thing, obviously, death is part of life. So, in other words, in every creative process, in every beginning, there's an ending. And obviously, we can't have the new, we can't have the creative, we can't have birth without also endings. In the history of the planet, and we're talking here about the very natural occurrences, this planet has been through, as you know, cycle after cycle of new forms of life being born, old forms of life being destroyed. It's actually a part of, what in the tradition is called the divine play of creation, sustenance, and dissolution or destruction. So, were it not for the destructive aspect of the goddess, you could imagine what a utter garbage heap this planet would be with all the forms. So in that sense, it's a part of nature. It's a part of the universal experience. I would say, in another sense, and this is, of course, a big subject, and there are a lot of aspects to it, and believe me, I am not one of those who, who welcomes natural disasters. I mean, I understand the tremendous destruction in the human world that occurs. But I would also say that for somebody who's really tuned into to the divine energy, to the fierce form of the divine, it's possible to recognize a very profound dynamic quality that manifests itself through a hurricane. If you've ever been in a hurricane,
mm-hmm.
which I grew up on the coast of North Carolina, so I've been in a lot of hurricanes.
The Gulf, Gulf of Mexico for me,
yeah,
lots of hurricanes.
So you know the fierce beauty of storms. I mean, because there's so much human habitation on the planet, and so much of it is not built to withstand natural phenomena, it's incredibly destructive on the human level. But if you think of it simply as a natural phenomenon, You know, it's much easier to see the divine quality in a astronomer.
Right. Well, and you made me think about Pele, too, and the idea of the lava. I mean, we know now that, you know, from the death, you know, the lava destroys, but after, you know, the lava goes through this process and it becomes a very rich source of new life.
Exactly.
So it's that rebirth and that transformation that we see. Well, and before we go on to using the goddesses for yoga, address the true
Tantra.
Meaning of Tantra as opposed to what's been exploited out there.
Well, the Tantra literally means it has actually several meanings. One of its meanings is tapestry. Another one of its meanings is effective means for transformation. And the core of tantric understanding is that the life force energy that's in our bodies, that's in everything living, is our link, is the link between the physical and the spiritual world, and that we can use that if we look at energy as divine in all of its forms, as an aspect of the divine, specifically the divine feminine, you know, which in the tantric traditions that I've been trained in, you know, the tantras consider the world to consist of masculine and feminine poles of consciousness, which we can see in nature all up and down the chain of being. So, at the ultimate level, in the tantric understanding, the masculine is awareness, consciousness, and the feminine is power and dynamism. So tantra harnesses dynamic power in many, many forms in order to unfold consciousness so that we are able to experience unity and our full connection with other beings and with the divine. So, and one of the forms of energy that Tantra works with are energies that are considered dicey or non-spiritual. And in the deep tantric traditions, the senses can become gateways into the divine, through recognizing that at the heart of taste, for example, is a very deep form of bliss. So if you can connect the enjoyment of taste with bliss at its core, then savoring food or music or sexuality or a beautiful sight, that all of these can be traced back to their heart, which is in the tantric tradition considered to be the experience of divine bliss. So, but
on like some of these websites that are pretty dicey, they're not talking about sacred sexuality there. That's something different than what you're talking about. Am I right?
Well, sacred sexuality is an aspect of Tantra. I mean, there has been for centuries a tantric practice that uses sexuality as a doorway, but it's not. It's not really the way it's practiced in the West. In the West, Tantra has become it's basically a form of couples therapy, if you will. You know, it's a way for couples to tune into their breath while having sex with each other and just kind of increase their pleasure, which is not a bad thing. But in the true tantric tradition, sexuality is one. Is one ritual among many, and not even that important a ritual in most tantric traditions. Tantric traditions are generally traditions that really train us to take every breath as an offering. To eat food as an offering, to do our actions as an offering, and including, you know, including our sexuality. But
well,
it's not primarily a sexual practice.
I understand. But I guess I was just trying to delineate between some of these
yes.
websites that talk of, you know, they're no more than an escort service. And
exactly.
You know,
exactly.
But they'll throw the word tantra goddesses in there, or tantra, as if to, you know, try to, you know, make something that isn't, you know, maybe sacred. You know, it's misleading, is what
I'm
trying to say.
It absolutely is.
But let's talk a little bit about why somebody would want to meditate on goddesses rather than the more traditional form of maybe meditation that you would do in yoga.
Well, first of all, goddess meditation is a traditional form of yoga.
Okay.
The interesting thing about yoga in the West is that contemporary yoga in the West is actually comes from a tantric tradition in India. You know, that the yoga asanas, the yoga practices were actually part of a series of practices that among them, you know, along with the yoga practices, they were practiced in order to arouse the Kundalini energy, the sacred energy that, you know, that's traditionally said to be lodged in the base of the spine, and that can be aroused through different means, but yoga asana was one of the classic means. Yoga and breathing, you know, breath exercises was one of the classic means to awaken the Kundalini Shakti. And Kundalini is traditionally understood, and I can say in my experience that this is true, that Kundalini is the energetic form of the sacred creative energy of the universe that lives inside the human body, and that when awakened actually begins to evolve our consciousness, transform our body, transform our mind and our understanding. And Kundalini has always been associated with the goddess, with the sacred feminine. The traditional mythic understanding about Kundalini, that is, which we could call the inner goddess in every human being, is that when she's asleep, we experience the world is outside us. We, you know, we're at the mercy of our mind. We experience the suffering and confusion of ordinary human life, and that when Kundalini is awakened, and when we really devote ourselves to the practices that can allow us to open to her capacity for transforming us, she literally enlightens our physical and subtle bodies, and eventually rises to the crown and joins our physicality, the earth element in our being, with the spiritual element, and ends our experience of separation. So in the secret traditions, the esoteric traditions of yoga, the goddess is utterly core to the practice. You know, of course, as yoga has come to the West, first of all, it's, you know, that contemporary yoga is practiced very much for health and and athleticism and a kind of relaxation and other wonderful benefits. But at its core, yoga is about awakening the transformative spiritual energy within your body and allowing yourself to be transformed by it.
So would you say, in a sense, because I have a lot of listeners out there that a lot of this is new to them, it sounds a bit like maybe what you would also get out of working with the chakras, or the, you know, is there similarities?
Yeah, yes. The chakras are very much a part of the Kundalini system. And in fact, people, if you're familiar with the chakra system, which I suspect you are, and probably, you know, some of your listeners have come across this as well. In the traditional Indian understanding, the yogic understanding of the chakras, every one of the chakras has has an energy within it, which is essentially a goddess energy. So different different aspects of the divine feminine are associated with the different chakras. And
so which goddesses would be associated with which chakras, if I'm understanding you right?
Well, for example, it actually depends on the system, but I'll tell you the way I understand it and the way I've been taught and the way it's comes through in my meditation practice. So the goddess Kali, who's the goddess of deep earth transformation, is one of the goddesses associated with the root chakra. The goddess Lakshmi is associated with the second chakra, with generativity and creativity that, you know, in the earth that belongs to the natural world. The goddess Durga is associated with the third chakra, which is activity and outgoing power in the world. The goddess Lalita is the goddess of the crown chakra. The goddess Saraswati of the throat chakra, and some goddesses, for example, Parvati, Durga, Kali, almost all of the goddesses can be experienced in the heart chakra, because the heart chakra is actually the chakra where our relationship to any deity that we feel close to manifests. And the sixth chakra, the Ajna chakra, is associated with goddesses like Chinnamasta and Bhuvaneshwari, who are very esoteric goddesses, goddess deities. So, and as you tune into the chakras and invoke these different goddesses in the chakras, what you discover is that they are capable of enlivening the chakras in a very mystical way. So, you know, we can work with our chakras, by connecting them to our organ systems and to our physical health, and that's the kind of physical level of working with the chakras. We can also work with the chakras, connecting them to very esoteric, mystical states, and that's part of what the goddess energies offer us when we meditate on them in the chakras.
So someone new to this, who maybe hasn't experienced the Kundalini energy, maybe hasn't even worked with the chakras, where do they start? You know, how do they know when they're starting to make that connection? You know, how do they know when they feel it?
That is a great question. So one of the reasons, just to get back to the book, one of the reasons I wrote this book, Awakening Shakti, The Transformative Power of the Goddesses of Yoga, was to introduce people to these different goddesses. And the book explains the mythology of these 11 goddesses. It gives meditations, their illustrations that you can meditate on. And it explains the different ways in which you might feel related to one goddess or another. When I teach workshops on the goddess, what I generally suggest people do is, first of all, activate the heart chakra, because for most of us, opening the heart chakra, becoming familiar with the heart chakra is really the quickest way to touch into our own capacity for deeper love. And then I would suggest finding a picture of the goddess that you're interested in, and there are many such images, practicing with the mantra of the goddess, and doing a meditation that is actually adapted to almost any deity. Let's say you decide that you'll meditate on Lakshmi, who's the goddess of abundance, beauty, wealth. She's a very beautiful, gentle goddess. She's very connected to human love, to harmony in society. In other words, she's a form of the divine feminine that most of us would like to have a closer relationship with in our lives, because she's associated with much of the sweetness of life. So you might imagine, Lakshmi, you're seated before you, for example, and the way she's depicted is as a very, very beautiful, slender woman with, you know, I usually picture her as an Indian goddess with kind of golden skin or dark skin, you know, long dark hair, very large eyes, beautifully dressed in red silk, in, you know, in robes or a sari. And she's traditionally seen with two hands, one of which is facing you in a gesture that says, have no fear, and the other of which is shown in a gesture. In the icons, she's shown with golden coins dripping from her, from that hand. So you imagine her, you would imagine her standing in front of you or seated in front of you, and you would breathe with the sense of Lakshmi's presence with your attention in the heart, and you would imagine that with your inhalation, you're drawing in her benign and loving energy. She's really a goddess of love. You're drawing her energy into your heart, and with the exhalation, you kind of open your heart to receive her. So that's a very simple way of summoning a goddess. You imagine her in a specific form, or simply ask, may the goddess of abundance, the goddess Lakshmi, be present here with me. If I were working with you, I would give you a mantra, a Lakshmi mantra, which would help to bring her forth. And little by little, through this invocation, you would start to experience a very sweet, loving, very kind of nectarian energy inside your heart, perhaps in the room. And, you know, you would begin to realize that this particular goddess energy, this Shakti being the Sanskrit word for the energy of the divine, this Shakti is actually accessible to you. And, you know, you might just sit with the sense of her presence and breathe her in and ask her just to be present in your meditation, and then go on with your normal meditation, whatever meditation you're doing.
And it's often said that, you know, to know Goddess, you really feel Goddess. And you're reminding me of this, you know, quite frankly. So really you could, you wouldn't have to, as you go up the chakras, you wouldn't have to visualize and try to feel the energy of each goddess. You could just focus on one goddess, for instance.
Exactly, and traditionally that is what people do. You know, one of the things I do in the book, I actually, in all honesty, I really recommend this book to people who are interested in these goddesses, because it's been called, a Bible for people who are interested in the goddess of yoga. It really makes it very clear how you get in touch with a goddess, and it helps show you which goddess you're drawn to, because that's, of course, as I'm sure you know, Karen, the essence of this kind of practice is that each of us is connected to particular goddess energies. It's, you know, we have a natural affinity.
Right. And that's one of the reasons I want to ask you about Durga. I tend to feel a connection with Sekhmet, who I think is very much like Durga, you know, that protection and strength. Talk a little bit about, obviously Sarasvati, we all want abundance and sweetness and all of that, but how would, say, Durga be of importance to women today?
Okay, great question. Durga is my Shakti also. So Durga is a warrior. The myths about Durga are all myths about her slaying demons for the protection of the world. And she's very much a goddess of strength. She's motherly, and she's also fierce. Her fierceness is always protective. So for contemporary women, and I know a lot of contemporary women whom I would call Durgas, you know, she's the goddess that you would invoke as a woman finding your strength in the corporate world, or as a woman juggling a job and a family life, or as, you know, at those times when when you're very much challenged by difficulties or just need help. One of the stories I tell in the book, if we have time for this, is of a student of mine who was in the middle of a very difficult divorce. With, you know, her husband had been abusive both to her and to her daughters, and she was and he was also he was a lawyer and very skillful, and you know, she went through an extremely difficult time getting custody of her daughters, and throughout the process she meditated on Durga. She asked for Durga's help, and over and over again the power of this particular warrior mother protective goddess would guide her, give her strength, give her confidence that she could move through it. And I know many, many women who, you know, who are facing challenges that women have always faced, but also the particular challenges of women learning to find, you know, learning to lead. I'm actually reading Sheryl Sandberg's book, Lean In, about mm-hmm. women in business, and she, you know, Durga is very much the goddess for this woman leader.
Okay. Well, in that makes perfect sense. And so would you say, for instance, that if you're not particularly drawn to the Hindu pantheon, for instance, you could do this very same thing with goddesses of other pantheons that are sort of representative of the same energy?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay.
And their goddesses, their corresponding goddesses in different traditions, obviously. The thing I would say about the Hindu goddesses, which is one of the reasons why I find them so powerful, is that, you know, the Hindu goddesses are part of a living tradition. There are a lot of esoteric secret groups that practice with Celtic goddesses or with the Egyptian goddesses, and I don't have much experience with them, but it sounds like you do, and I know that they're very powerful and that they're, you know, they're profound practices associated with them. The thing about the Hindu goddesses is that millions and millions of people worship them, meditate on them, you know, go to them for help, and as you know, part of the power of deity is in the vortex that's created over time by the many, many people who love and practice with mm-hmm. with that deity. You know, as the Virgin of Guadalupe, for example, whom I think of as the great goddess of the Western United States. You know,
right.
She's so alive that, you know, it's so easy to tune into. To Our Lady of Guadalupe.
Delicately saying is because people have put so much energy into the Hindu goddesses, because it's been a living tradition for 3,000 years, where, like, say, just for instance, maybe the Egyptian pantheon, you know, that hasn't been a living tradition for so long. Maybe the Hindu goddess pantheon is more potent because it hasn't, you know, it hasn't suffered that dormancy. And it reminds me of a movie I saw once. It was a King Arthur movie, and they were talking about the Lady of the Lake, and the Lady of the Lake was having a conversation with Arthur, and she was saying that she was fading because the people were forgetting her.
Yes.
And it's a reciprocity,
exactly.
You know. It's
yes.
You know, we put in, they give back. I think that's
exactly.
that's, you know, maybe something you wanted to talk about as well, about praying the goddess as heart based rather than just praying to get what you want.
The thing is that when you begin to tune into these goddesses, you begin to have a real relationship with them. You know, in other words, that what may be in the beginning a kind of an abstract form or name or mantra that you're kind of curious about, if you invest some time in practice, you do begin to have a very palpable, real experience of this feminine presence in your life. And perhaps you begin by invoking them for help, for boons, which people have done for centuries and continue to do. But after a while, you just start to love this being. And there's a sense of, you know, a kind of reciprocal mutual love that gets deeper and deeper, because the nature of the divine feminine is love. You know, it's anyone who's had a, you know, a very deep relationship with their mother, or with, you know, or with nature, or with the traditional feminine forms of life, knows the quality of the feminine as love, and these goddesses incarnate love in the most potent form I've ever experienced. And this becomes deeper and deeper the more you tune into them. So after a while, you're there, you're in it for the relationship, you know, because there's enormous loving, affectionate blissfulness in, you know, in simply invoking these beings, these presences. And this is part of what happens when you recognize that they're real. You know,
To sort of get to that, myself, I came from the South, the Bible Belt. You know, you never heard about the goddesses at all. I mean, it wasn't until I was an adult woman, you know, I learned about the goddess. So obviously women, especially Western women, have been without the goddess so long. You know, maybe it's an obvious answer and maybe a rhetorical question almost, but I speak to the importance of women finding the goddess at this time in our world.
Yeah, I think it's absolutely crucial for women to have a, you know, a feminine deity form. And one reason, of course, is that, you know, that the heart of practicing with the recognition of the divine is to realize that God is within you. You know, that your human form is really the image of the divine, and it's difficult to worship the divinity inside your own body if your image of divinity is that of a different gender.
Mm-hmm.
You know, much as we know that, okay, that ultimately the divine is not masculine or feminine, is pure spirit, is pure energy, but the fact is that in the Western traditions, and also in many of the Eastern traditions, you know, the spirit has been associated with the masculine and been divorced from the physical world and from the body, you know, and the feminine has been in the East associated with Maya, the force of delusion. The world has been considered somehow devalued and fallen, and, you know, less spiritual than this pure masculine, disembodied, transcendent spirit, whereas the essence of the goddess practice is the recognition that the body, the physical world, the soil, the earth, you know, the human world is imbued with the divine feminine. Is, you know, so in loving the feminine, women learn how to honor their own bodies and the bodies of, you know, the bodies of the others in their lives. And, you know, we know how much confusion and shame women have historically attached to their bodies, you know.
Absolutely.
So,
well, go ahead.
So I was just going to say that when you start to honor your own physical body as a form of the goddess, as a form of the divine feminine, it's life transforming.
Well, I think that's probably a pretty good note to end on, Sally. Before we go, though, is there anything else you'd like to say that maybe we haven't gotten a chance to chat about?
Well, there's of course, we could go on for days about this topic, but I would just I really want to recommend looking at the book. It's published by Sounds True. It's got a beautiful cover, and it's available on ebook and, you know, and in a physical book, because it really I have been finding that, and I'm not a person to do commercials, honestly, but I've been getting mail from literally dozens of women over the 3 or 4 months since the book was published, saying that working with this book has completely changed the way they meditate and the way they experience themselves as women, as yoga students. So I would just recommend looking at it. You know, you can read a sample chapter on the Sounds True website or on my website. And, you know, just seeing if this kind of practice has something to offer you as a woman and as a man. So that's the book is called Awakening Shakti, and you can get it on Amazon or on SoundsTrue.com or on my website SallyKempton.com.
Well, thank you, Sally. I've enjoyed the chat, and
me too.
I think you've really opened up maybe a new dimension. For some listeners out there who hadn't thought to use this practice. And we don't really have time to get into it, but something else that's really interesting listeners can learn about in her book is that the 11 goddesses also have a shadow side and a light side. So that would be, you know, something to, you know, an interesting thing to delve into as well. Would you say maybe meditation on goddesses is easier than just the traditional type of meditation, Sally, for maybe people who've maybe given up on meditation and find it just too hard to, you know, to manage?
I would say that that when you get in touch with the goddess, meditation becomes easier, all forms of meditation, because you begin to tap into your own natural meditation energy. So yes, I would say that meditation on the goddess and meditation with the help of the goddess is not only easier, it's really juicy. It's fun.
Yeah, a different energy than just meditation without the goddesses. You know, much more heartfelt, maybe. I don't know if I'm using the right language, but
you're using the perfect language. That's exactly right.
Yeah, it much more of a feeling, you know, not so clinical, I think.
Yes. Yes, well, yeah. Exactly. Much more loving, more energized, because the goddesses are life force, you know, they are energy. So there's a dancing quality to goddess meditation that you immediately pick up on. And that's delicious. It's a very delicious form of meditation.
Well, thank you for writing the book, and thank you for sharing your insight with listeners.
And thank you so much, Karen, for everything you do show and the conversation.
Well, thank you very much. We're all doing our part here. try to rebuild this world. Thank you.
God
thank you very
us.
Much, Sally, for helping
thank
women
you,
find the tools to connect with these goddesses. It's so important for our world and for ourselves.
And thank you, Karen, for everything that you're doing. So
okay.
Have a lovely evening.
Same to you. Good night, Sally.
Good night.
Well, listeners, hear those bees buzzing. I think you know what that means. Those are the bees buzzing around in my bonnet, and the source of that buzzing tonight is news from the Feminist Daily News. It's a constant struggle of wins and challenges, isn't it? You've no doubt heard the expression, one step forward, two steps back. Well, here's one step forward. Feminist News reports that the first female speaker of Bangladesh took her oath on May 1st. Shirin Sharmin Chaudhary, I'm probably murdering her name, was sworn in as Bangladesh's first female speaker of the parliament. She was unanimously elected by the parliament earlier that week to fill the vacant seat. Previously, she was a member of the majority Awami League party and was the state minister for women and children affairs. In addition to advancing women's equality through her women's development policy legislation, the new speaker has declared ending violence against women a top priority. She told reporters, "We have enough laws, but there are still incidents of violence. It is not only the law that can change the situation. There is a need to change the mindset. Obstacles have always been there, but despite the obstacles, women have been able to come far and will go further." Her rise to speaker and policies for advancing the rights of women have drawn opposition from conservative religious leaders. Well, of course. With Chaudhary as speaker, women hold three of the four most powerful political positions in the Bangladesh government. in addition to many other leadership positions. She's also the first woman elected to speaker who has come from one of 50 seats in Parliament, especially reserved for women. Pretty nice, isn't it, that seats are reserved for women instead of like here in the United States where we have less than 20% women in Congress. But two steps back, because there is a signature drive for 2015 in Mississippi to get personhood going again. Last week, Mississippi Attorney General Jim Hood approved the language for a 2015 ballot measure that would amend the Mississippi State Constitution to define life as beginning at conception. Now supporters need to collect 107,000 valid signatures of Mississippi voters to add it to the Mississippi ballot in 2015. It's called Initiative Measure Number 41, originally approved by the state legislature on March 5th, would ask Mississippi voters, should the Mississippi Constitution be amended to state that the right to life as a person begins at conception? If approved, it would add the following amendment to the Mississippi Constitution. The right to life begins at conception. All human beings at every stage of development are unique, created in the image of God, and shall enjoy the inalienable right to life as persons under law. I guess they are forgetting about the rights of the woman who is the incubator for that new life. Already, opposition to Initiative Measure 41 is growing. A petition and a Facebook group called No Means No, Mississippians United Against Personhood has started to raise awareness about the renewed personhood drive and to gather signatures against Measure 41. And you always can count on Republicans, or like I call them, Rethuglicans, for their callousness. And the second step backward is Washington State Senate staffers say gays can go grow their own food. Isn't that interesting? A staff person for Washington State Senator Mike Hewitt, Republican from Walla Walla, recently told a Washington blogger that lesbian gay individuals can fend for themselves when they are denied services under a recently proposed bill. Jay Castro, a reader of the Washington blog column Slog at the Stranger, called Senator Hewitt's office about his sponsorship of this bill, which would allow people to refuse to provide services and to discriminate against lesbian, gay, bi, trans people because of their sincerely held religious beliefs. Castro asked an unidentified staffer, well, what would rural gays supposed to do if the only gas station or grocery store for miles won't sell them gas and food because they're gay? And this Republican staffer responded by saying, well, gay people can just grow their own food. Nice, huh? Well, another step forward, however, let's go to the positive. Saudi Arabia launched the first domestic violence PSA, public service announcement. The King Khalid Foundation, KKF, in Saudi Arabia has launched the first advertising campaign to combat violence against women in Saudi Arabia. The advertisement features a woman in a veil with a black eye and a caption that reads, "Some things can be covered. Fight women's abuse together." Some things can't be covered, sorry, fight women's abuse together. Other versions of the poster feature the slogan, "What is hidden is worse." The foundation has also released a report on the extent of violence against women and children in the country. In the report, the King Khalid Foundation said it is a phenomenon that is still shrouded in darkness. Anyone who works in security knows about it, and those who work in social organizations and charity centers can see it firsthand. Also, people who work in hospitals and schools see a fraction of it, but no one knows the exact amount or how much it is spread or the real reasons or actual impact in total. So despite advancements, women in Saudi Arabia face limited public involvement. In 2012, the first female members were sworn into the Shura Council, and in 2011, the king granted women the right to vote. Despite gaining the right to vote, Saudi women still have to rely on male relatives or paid drivers to travel by car due to religious edicts issued by Muslim clerics. Saudi women Saudi women also are being tracked by text message. And one step sideways. We had the steps forward, steps back, now sideways. Ireland unveils new abortion legislation. Last week, the Irish Parliament unveiled the Protection of Life and Pregnancy Bill, which clarifies when a woman can have a life-saving abortion. Under the new bill, women can terminate a pregnancy when there is a significant threat to life, including suicide. In the case of an emergency, a single doctor can approve and perform the abortion. In non-emergency cases, a woman would have to get the approval of two doctors that the pregnancy poses a significant threat to her life, and abortion is the only option. In the case where a woman is suicidal, she must have the approval of a doctor and two psychiatrists that the threat of suicide is legit. The bill is now being debated in committee. Prime Minister Enda Kenny was quick to clarify that the bill would not alter Ireland's current laws on abortion. She says, "This bill restates the general prohibition on abortion in Ireland." He says the law on abortion in Ireland is not being changed. Currently, abortion in all cases is prohibited, including rape, incest, and non-viable fetal abnormality. The only exception is when a woman's life is at risk as a result of a 1999 Irish Supreme Court decision known as the X case. The barriers to terminating a life-threatening pregnancy in Ireland gained international attention last year when a woman died after being denied an abortion. Savita Halapanavar was 17 weeks pregnant when she arrived at University Hospital in Galway, complaining of severe back pain in October 2012. The hospital staff determined she was miscarrying. However, doctors refused to remove the pregnancy for 3 days. After the pregnancy was removed, Savita was transferred to intensive care where she died 3 days later of what was determined to be septicemia or blood poisoning. Of course, it all could have been avoided. Interesting, isn't it? Yes, listeners, we have to be like water wearing away rock. I am told, and I think history proves, the arc of time does point toward progress and hope, which is why these two quotes have become the motto for my show. The first is by Gandhi. First they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight you, then you win. The second is from Arthur Schopenhauer. All truth passes through three stages. First, it's ridiculed. Second, it is violently opposed, and third, it is accepted for being self-evident. I think these are perfect mottos for the show and for those of us who believe we really need a shift away from dominator patriarchal ideas that benefit mostly men or the 1% at the top and leave the rest of the 99% suffering at the bottom of the heap. Until we become a society without its boot on the neck of women and their rights, a society of more equality, until we defeat the devastating income disparity so many are suffering from, until we can beat down this austerity so many have thrust upon them, until we start thinking about the general welfare and the common good, really think about that, which are all goddess ideals, we will continue here beating the drum for the sacred feminine, deity, archetype, and ideal. We will beat the drum for a world of caring and sharing, where greed is once again considered a deadly sin, for a world where women don't do 80% of the work and own less than 20% of the assets. We will beat the drum for a world where women have a right to choice when it comes to our own body. And these recent laws being passed across mostly Republican-led Congresses that deny women access to clinics is a violation of women's constitutional rights. Funny how they don't care about that constitutional right. I think depending on where you are, you're experiencing different part of Gandhi's quote. Some of us are experiencing that we're being ignored. Others are feeling laughed at. Still others feel them fighting us, and we are tasting wins as well. But there is much yet to do to eradicate the sexism, the racism, the homophobia, the fascism, and just general exploitation across the globe. Well, I asked last week for a favor of listeners, but I'll ask again and maybe continue to do so for a short time. until I feel I've gotten the word out. I'm really trying to sell out my remaining copies of Sacred Places of Goddess so my publisher and I can go our separate ways. If you're thinking about a gift for yourself or a friend, or would like a one-of-a-kind book for your library that tells about ancient and living traditions of Goddess and her sacred sites around the world, please help me sell out the remaining copies. Purchase them from any local bookseller, or better yet, directly from me on my website at KarenTate.com. I have a Goddess store page where I sell books at a better price than you can get them new on the online sellers, or make a donation. If you say it's for a book to go to a worthy cause, tell me what it is and I will send it in your name. And thanks for letting me put that out there. And hey, if you'd like to buy a big quantity for a fundraiser, we might even be able to give you a deep discount. And don't forget, listeners, I just want to ask you, think about it. Are you letting loose your sacred roar? Are you emailing, writing, calling the White House and your representatives and senators in Congress, whether you want them to represent your views on gun legislation, background checks, women's rights to our reproductive health, protecting Social Security, which means no change CPI, which are actually cuts to Social Security? Please do. Please do. Seniors are already often living in poverty. It's immoral to cut their benefits so the richest corporations can continue getting their corporate welfare. Please find your sacred roar. Find your Kali, your Morrigan, your Sekhmet, your Durga, these goddesses we talked about earlier, these goddesses or archetypes or warrioresses. No wallflowers that sit back and say, let's pray our way to equality or peace. The interests out there who care more about greed and austerity are loud and powerful and rich, but we have the numbers. We have right on our side. So I encourage you, dear sisters and brothers, find your sacred roar. With that said, I shall bid you good night until Thursday when I'm back with two wonderful guys who I think emulate the future of what men can be. That'll be Carl McColeman with us to discuss Julian of Norwich, a Christian mystic in 1371 in the hidden dimension of goddess spirituality within Christianity, followed by Andrew Gervich. We'll discuss Gaian interconnectivity and the future of public myth, a very sweeping topic for sure, so you won't want to miss it. So let me close tonight's show with some music from one of our new artists called Celia. I don't know if you'll have time to hear it all, but you'll get a nice chunk of it. Let's go with Everyday Goddess. Enjoy, and I'll be with you on Thursday. Good night, dear listeners, and may Goddess embrace you in her golden wings.
You're no big deal. And this is Everyday Goddess.
She's a mother up to work. She is driving in her car. She's a goddess. The elevator rising like a star. They say she's working like a man, but they don't understand. She's dancing with the goddess in her heart. She's that woman on the phone. She's smoothing out a steel. And though her back is aching, she's a goddess in high heels. She works 6 a.m. to 3. And in be hard to see, but the beauty of the goddess runs deep.
It's really no big deal, I'm just an everyday goddess, doing all my goddess duties, trying to find a way. I am the maiden and the mother and the clone, but it's really no big deal, it's just another day.
Your queen.